Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
Oh, man. What's up? I'll tell you what's up, Andrew. I don't know what day it is. Loved ones have been forgotten.
Yeah.
I forgot to call my dad. I haven't called my dad. I used to call him every second day. Could we just chat and talk? I've forgotten about him. I'm frazzled in the midst of this World Cup.
When you say, like, you haven't talked to him in weeks, like he...
It's a while. It's a while.
I mean, the games end every day at 4 o'clock Eastern time, so...
Not up here, they don't.
I was going to say, the next 7 hours before you go to bed, you're just replaying moments. You know what? I respect that. Once every 4 years.
In bed the other night, I was kicking and thrashing around like I was Toivonen scoring a goal.
What a show, man. Oh, we have a great show coming up for you. Obviously, we'll take a look back on today's action, specifically in Group B, which was insanity.
Group A was qualified by Group B, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, yes, it was a nice little appetizer to the main course.
It was amazing. Let's get into Group A, can we, straight away?
Yeah, sure. Uruguay, we'll start with that. Their 3-0 win over the host nation, Russia. Russia, who had been flying through this tournament, maybe smacked back down to earth just a little bit, you'd have to say.
A little bit, but I think the main objective had been achieved. I would be surprised if they don't come out all guns blazing in the round of 16.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the approach was there. It's the first jeers for Russia.
Well, it was also a total unknown in the moment as to where you were rather, where would you rather have finished in that group?
Yeah, it's like, 'cause I where do you want to be?
The goal, I think, is kind of, even though Spain have, and we'll get to Spain in a sec, they've looked so very kind of underwhelming so far, I think, for what we maybe had expected them to be. The goal still is to try to avoid them as long as possible if you're one of these teams coming out of Group A. And it was completely unknown at that point as to where that would be. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. But things happen in this game that Russia wouldn't like a late red card on the two yellows. I mean, you don't want to start losing players as you head into the knockout round.
Also, Russian fans will look at it and they'll say, oh God, the first team we've played that's of really any kind of football standing in the world, and we get tump. So, you know.
Yeah, and then there's Uruguay, who, I guess, I don't know, they look, you know, Suarez, Cavani, they played pretty well. I don't even really know what to say. I mean, I guess Uruguay needed a game like that heading into the knockout round because they, too, have been kind of, you know.
Tim Vickery wrote a great piece where he described Uruguay's football in the first two games as football within a bunker.
Yeah.
Like, they throw a grenade and then they hide and just kind of absorb. They absorbed attacks from Saudi Arabia. Like, this is the level of what Uruguay are going to play ugly football right to the very end. This is who they are. So Russia having been their kind of coming out party as an attacking force is not going to feel good for the Russians, I guess.
No, probably not. And then the other game in Group A, Egypt 1 and Saudi Arabia 2, as Saudi Arabia score extremely late, basically the last kick of the ball. Good for them. Their first World Cup win in 13 World Cup matches. So now the baton of loserdom is passed to Honduras, who have never won in 9 matches, 6 losses, 3 draws.
How cool was it for a 45-year-old man to save a penalty as well?
Yes, very cool.
Made his debut in 1993.
Oh, yeah, a great moment. And look, I thought Mo Salah's goal was awesome.
Yeah.
Chip from that distance. I thought it was, in the moment too, it felt like it could have been important.
It was,
and again, important, these are relative terms. These teams knew they weren't advancing. But there's still something to be said for getting a win, especially for Saudi Arabia. You saw what it meant to them when they finally did get that win, their first ever.
Also, important for Salah in the sense of the rumors that have been swirling around him regarding, like, he's not coming back for Egypt. He did a good post-match where he was, I won't say upbeat, but he seems like a positive kind of guy, and he said, we're already preparing for the next World Cup. And I think him saying that will have assuage some of the fears of Egyptian fans.
Yeah, it would obviously be such an incredible shame for a guy who's still in his prime, who has another World Cup in his prime in him, or at least a run up to one. I mean, it's no guarantee, obviously, that Egypt will qualify, but Mo Salah continuing at this rate, we'd all like to see him in another major tournament. So it would be sad, just like the way Messi retiring from Argentina after the Copa Centenario would have been sad for this World Cup. So hopefully, I don't know, cooler heads prevail. You know, the emotions right now, you see it. I don't know. I'm trying to remember back to other World Cups, JJ, where the emotion that guys have shown in the early part of this tournament, Neymar in tears, Chicharito in tears after very early games.
Well, don't forget,
non-knockout stage games. I'm just trying to remember if that has that been a regular occurrence in past World Cups. I just feel like the emotion is just like way ratcheted up, even by World Cup standards.
You thought everybody else was more the kind of Gary Cooper, strong, silent type in previous World Cups. It went round, stiff upper lip.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if that's true. I'd have to think back, but I would say that with Neymar, I would take that with a pinch of salt. I mean, it's either A, he's under tremendous pressure, or B, this guy is the most social media savvy guy in the world and is just ready to add this to the Instagram story of his life.
So he's faking it, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah. This guy, I mean,
you've always had it in for
him. This is a guy who broke his foot and decided to, on the day of the death of Dr. Stephen Hawking, get in a wheelchair and come on. This is a individual who is very social media savvy. Wow. And he's looking to... He thinks his life is one long Instagram story. I'm convinced of it.
I mean, I don't know that I agree with that.
Shameless narcissist.
So Neymar has faked his tears throughout this tournament.
Yep, I've decreed it.
Let's look at Group B. This was... Now, let me ask you, before we even talk about the games, do you enjoy... look, the simultaneous action has to happen. There's great reasons for it. So you hate the games going on together.
Because I watch both and I feel like I've seen nothing except a mush of red card or potential yellow cards and a VAR, and I don't know what's going on. So my mind is not in the best state
help. I had them on two TVs right next to one another.
Oh yeah, so and did I. Foolishness.
It also didn't help that, you know, you had... It was just so easy to confuse everything. You had like two teams in red who were favorites playing against two teams wearing basically identical white kits.
Colors are the enemy.
Like, no, but it was just like, it was just like the two small TVs right next to one another while you're doing other things during your day. It is a lot, but there's also that sort of fun of just the chaos of all of these things. Like as those two games were coming to a conclusion, it was really thrilling stuff to see the way that how was VAR going to rule on this and if it was going to have a direct effect on what was going on over here, and then all of a sudden the same thing happened. It was there was some fun to just the mayhem of the ends of those games happening together.
And Portugal-Iran was so dramatic. There was a penalty that was adjudicated by VAR, which... Ooh, I don't know if it was a penalty.
You're talking about this handball on Cedric?
Cedric, who wasn't even facing the ball when
he
jumped.
I'm sorry, man. I thought, you know, I'm a proponent of VAR, and I believe that it's done a really good job in this tournament, but that was one today where I said, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is now paralysis by analysis. We are now overthinking decisions. We've seen enough of these over the years, these handballs in the box, and I feel like I've been starting to get a better sense
of what is and what isn't.
And that's not.
No.
That's just not.
Because remember, in the other game today, PK has his hand down by his side, and it hits him on the hand, and rightly, that's not given as a penalty.
By the way, while we're talking about him, early in that game...
I don't know what that tackle was.
I mean, what else do you need to do to get a red card than that? Than a two-footed lunge at somebody's ankles the way that he did? I mean, I don't know.
Did he have somewhere else he needed to be?
I wonder a little bit, and look, there's decisions that may contradict what I'm about to say, but you know, that play by PK later in the Portugal match, the yellow card given to Ronaldo instead of a red card.
Oh, my word.
I wonder a little bit if referees are afraid to have too big of an impact in these games that mean so much.
Yeah, the Manchester United at Old Trafford effect. I won't make this about my own bias. The big team effect. Definitely. Like, Ronaldo's come across and he smashed the guy in the jaw with his forearm. You can look at it any way you want. That's what happened.
Yeah. And
that's
look,
a red.
And I thought Gerard Piqué's was even more egregious than what Ronaldo did.
Yeah.
because he really could have, like, truly injured somebody in a pretty terrible way with that tackle.
So VAR isn't actually eliminating one of the possible ills of the game, which is that the big teams always would get the big calls in their favor.
But you know what? The reason that you can't say that is because what happened 15 minutes after the Ronaldo incident? A terrible VAR decision went against Portugal.
Right.
So you can't necessarily make a blanket statement that it's just affecting, you know, the little teams are getting screwed out of some of these results. But I just wonder if these officials, I don't know if they're told beforehand, look, it's better for you to be, you know, they're not here for you. And ultimately, I do like that logic. Like, that's the right, I want the players to decide this. I don't want referees to be deciding a World Cup. But man, some of these calls, you're more bullish on the Ronaldo one than I am. To be honest, I was kind of okay with that going the way that it did. But the PK one, I don't know. The more I saw the replay, the more I thought, you're kidding me that that's not a red card.
I can agree with you that the Ronaldo one, you can make an argument for accidental contact or trying to step in front and that he didn't intentionally hit him in the face. With the PK one, you can't make that.
No.
Yeah. But at least, if we're talking consistency and consistency in decisions and all that, Ricardo Quaresma with the goal that's just probably his trademark goal. Cut inside, outside of the boot, top corner.
Yeah, and he now inserts his name into the list. Do you want to update your goals of the tournament up to this point, or are you still kind of, you want to hold off on that until Thursday when we know all of our...
Well, I think the Ronaldo free kick and the Nacho goal, I can't get those out of the... if I have a top three, they stay in there, and I think Musa's goal for Nigeria is the other one.
Oh, really?
Those are my three goals right now.
Nacho is still mine. Yeah, I think I would put Musa in my top three, and we'll talk about this coming up, but I think Toni Kroos might go into my top three now as well.
Mm.
I prefer
Toivonen's goal.
You've been talking about, ever since you came in today, you've been obsessing over it.
The angles, Andrew, the angles. He chest controls it, brings it into the box, flicks it up over Neuer. Unbelievable.
So real quick, before we move on to our observations, if you're Spain, you're Portugal, it didn't necessarily go the way you may have drawn it up, but they're moving on. How are these teams feeling about themselves right now? Just happy to have advanced? It feels like there's questions that could be asked of both.
Right.
I mean, Spain 2-2 against Morocco, a team that had already been eliminated. I know they're playing for a ton of pride, but I don't know. You just expect more from Spain.
Quick analysis of the last 16. So Saturday we got Portugal versus Uruguay. That game could be absolutely the worst game of the tournament. You've got two teams who they're not great in possession. Uruguay is, like I said, football from a bunker, hugely defensive, are going to be ugly and try and win it ugly, yet they've got that attacking element. Portugal are in a similar vein. They've got the attacking element in Ronaldo. They've got some players who are really, I think, playing within themselves. Maybe it's a breakout game for Portugal from what we've seen from Euro 2016 and this tournament so far. I don't know. I can't pick that one. I can't call that one. I think that's
totally agree.
I think that's really, really close. Spain versus Russia is interesting for me. Russia have proven in this tournament, apart from today, they can actually thrive without possession. We expect them to be at as close to full strength. They could cause problems for a Spain team that is, I mean, the error today for the goal between Piqué and Iniesta.
What happened there?
Spain is a heady mix right now of classic Spain football, like the goal by Isco, and terrible nonsense, like De Gea's mistake against Ronaldo and the mistake again today. Russia could cause them problems. I expect Spain will be feeling much better about avoiding Uruguay. So that's how I see those ties.
Fernando Hierro did speak about Spain and some of their defensive issues. I mean, he knows that they're out there right now, and you're going up against a Russian side who will have all the momentum of being the home team in the knockout stage. They'll have that behind them. They've scored 8 goals in this tournament right now, and Spain looks sloppy in defense. Now, Iniesta did make up for that error. I mean, he set up the Isco goal, which was a really nice one.
Yeah, he did. He did. But I'm just saying that right now, there's these mental lapses in the Spanish setup, and that it's going to give Russia cause for optimism. And like I said, they can do a lot of things without the ball. I don't think they're great. I don't think they've been found out yet. Certainly Spain is going to be the acid test for them.
Yeah. Let's see. We move on now to our World Cup observations. 3 things standing out to you and I over the last 3 days since we did our last podcast. You want to start?
Yeah, Andrew, it's coming home. It's coming home.
I have the same one as my number
Football's coming home. Have a listen to this.
Hard to know who you'd want to play. Yeah. Poland, Senegal, Japan, Colombia.
I think it's one of those, yeah. So concentrate on yourselves. Get yourself in the best possible shape going through this group. And we can certainly take on any of those teams. I think we'd be favourites on current form. Whatever.
Yeah, there's no one that will to worry about, I wouldn't say, in that group. Recuperation, though, I will say from here on in is key.
They'll sleep well, won't they? The England players tonight, or sometimes when you're buzzing,
sleep
you don't
sleep at all. They'll be buzzing. They'll be going through every goal and every move. They'll be, won't sleep at all. Loving it.
Yeah, great stuff. We're getting there. We're on our way.
The voices you heard there from the BBC are Gary Lineker, then it was Lampard, then Rio Ferdinand, and then Alan Shearer, and then finished out with Lineker at the end there. And it was Rio Ferdinand's comments that probably stood out the most to me.
Nothing to worry about.
I mean,
like a kid with a box of chocolates, a selection. Whatever one, we'll take them. Nothing to worry about. Incredible stuff.
How quickly... this was supposed to be the tournament of no expectations, and now...
Likeable, humble England.
And now we're looking at a potential matchup. We don't know how it'll play out. There's still different permutations, obviously, but a potential matchup for England against Colombia, let's say. Nothing to worry about. I would beg to differ. I mean, England might be my favorite in that game. I might pick them to go on, but let's not say nothing. There's almost no team that you could put down on paper right now that England would be playing that I would say nothing to worry about. I'm not trying to pour cold water on what they've done, because they've been really fun to watch. What they just did to Panama was a clinic, but it was Panama. And let's not forget that it took a stoppage time goal from Harry Kane to beat Tunisia. Hardly one of the world powers in the sport. So, I mean, JJ, they've gone 0-60 in terms of their enthusiasm behind this team in the blink of an eye, when this was supposed to be the tournament where that wasn't going to happen.
We had a nice little interaction on Twitter. Well, rather me and Gary Lineker did on Twitter at the weekend. Gary tweeted this. This is getting silly. Last time England scored four or more goals in a World Cup was the 1966 World Cup final. So again, he's invoking the ghosts of 1966. An hour later, he goes, Senegal could be the team to give England the most amount of trouble. And I tweeted, Gary reminds us of 66. Later, Gary worries about the threat of Senegal. Lineker is England in a nutshell. This roller coaster, they can't help themselves.
And I kind of think that's why a lot of people love him.
Yeah.
Because he is a player, but by the same time, he's also the voice of a lot of fans out there. I think he's one of the few players that fans may actually find relatable.
Yeah, because he's been there, being a Golden Boot winner, but he's also that fan at heart and wants England to do well. I am giddy with excitement about England. I put on a playlist of England songs. This is so...
Oh my God, no wonder you haven't spoken to your dad.
Yeah, I put on a playlist of England songs at the weekend. Vindaloo by Fat Les. It's Coming Home, New Order, World in Motion, all that, Three Lions, the whole thing. Because they're even getting me, somebody who wants them to lose in...
No, you don't. Let's be honest.
What?
Embrace it.
No,
want them to lose. You're loving this.
I want them at every tournament. I love this. I want the big crescendo to the quarterfinal or the semifinal, then the piano going down the stairs.
Really?
The collapse. It's not since Shakespeare... Has England given us such drama than England at a major tournament?
Will you feel that way if it's Jordan Henderson stepping up to the penalty spot?
Yeah.
You'll be rooting against him.
Don't forget, they're our bigger brother.
Okay.
Whatever way, this is cultural as well. This is ethnic. This is deep.
There we go.
No, I'm not being political. I love England. I love so many elements of English culture. But at the same time, when I hear stuff like that, because of, post-colonial hangover, my back gets up a little bit. The arrogance of Mother England always brings me to the point of where I love to see them epically fail.
Well, I commiserate because I'll never forgive them for burning our capital to the ground in the war of 1812.
You went
there. I hold a grudge.
You went there.
I can hold a grudge with the best of them. You think we forget?
No, we do not.
I'll say this about England. And I know it was Panama, and I don't want to have to qualify every sentence with saying that. Watching the set piece that they worked to perfection, where it was lovely. To the point where, I mean, it almost seemed by design, okay, John Stones, make sure you're here for if Raheem Sterling, who's not our best finisher, when he inevitably misses, you're there to finish. Like, it just felt like they had every element of that just worked out, and it was executed perfectly. Look, and I love Raheem Sterling. I'm just joking around, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, every single aspect of that was just worked to a T.
We had a listener tweet in and said, oh, you want to be careful. Why are you showing away or giving away your best moves? Panama. why are you showing the world your great move? Now, it is a decent free kick routine, but I'll tell you, so I will say something about the free kick routines and things like that. That is good to see that's working. You know what I mean? Because you have so little time, really, compared to your club, to work on stuff, that if people are tuning in on set pieces, and we've seen how important they are in this tournament.
Absolutely.
You know what? When you get to the knockout stages, it's good to have that in the locker. It's good to know they're working.
And you see Lingard scoring goals like that. And say what you want about
him. And then juggling his socks on the sidelines. Playful, humble England.
Pretty impressive. And then say what you want about Harry Kane's hat-trick, but it can never be a bad thing for your goal scorer to be in great goal-scoring form at a tournament like this.
Oh, yeah.
So whatever it does to his confidence, you see how streaky he gets with Spurs. If he gets on a run like that now, no matter how the goals are coming, it's obviously a great thing. By the way, Tony Adams, if he was wondering, Spurs players have scored the second most goals at this tournament behind Real Madrid. I believe it's 8-7. I saw that stat before today. I don't think anything happened today that changed that. Oh, no, Isco. So he extended Real Madrid. But Ronaldo missed a penalty. All right.
Your grudge list is fairly long. You've added the burning of the capital in, what, 1812?
Yeah.
1812 and also Tony Adams to that. Wow.
Yeah. They're all on. Should I make another list?
Those
who have wronged us. Adding to my those who have wronged us for the American list.
You have no space left.
No. By the way, JJ, one person on Twitter loved the trivia that we did last time. So you know what that means.
Oh, for God's sake.
That's right. Today's trivia is focused on England. I figured this is probably in your wheelhouse. So I went a little bit more difficult with some of these.
Oh, God.
Don't act like you don't enjoy this. I know you do.
I don't enjoy it. This is just you trying to put me on the spot and embarrass me in front of the world.
I should tell people that I knew the answers to all of these
questions.
No,
you didn't.
All right, ready?
Go.
England trivia today. In the current 32-team format, Kane and Stones became the sixth teammates to each score multiple goals in the same World Cup match. How about that? Can you name just two of the others? There's five other sets of teammates that have done it. Just give me two in the history of the World Cup. If you need a hint, I'd be happy. I'll provide you a hint.
In the history of England?
Not England. Right. In the World Cup, only six times in the current 32-team format, so since 1998 and onward, six times have teammates scored multiple goals in the same game.
Okay, I don't know. Come on,
don't do that.
I'm not. Just do it. Come on. I'd be thinking here forever.
Well, here's a hint.
Oh,
it's already happened in this tournament.
Come on, do it. I'm not even thinking. I refuse.
You know what? No, you know, stop the music. Stop the music, band.
Just do this. Come on, we're supposed
to be... No, he doesn't want to play. He doesn't want to play, everyone.
Oh, God, don't do that. Come on.
You're back in?
Yeah, I'm back
All
in.
All right! Belgium has done it this year. Lukaku and Hazard.
Oh, okay.
Both did it. In 2014, what's the definitive game of that tournament? Four years ago.
The 7-1.
Yeah, it happened in that game. Germany did it. Andre Schürrle and Toni Kroos did it against Brazil.
Lukaku and Hazard.
Yeah. That happened in this tournament already. Against Tunisia.
Right.
Okay. They each scored two goals in that game.
Okay.
Are you having a hard time? What's going on? Your mind really is mush.
No, I actually got the question wrong in my head.
Netherlands also did it in 2014. Van Persie and Robin did against Spain.
Multiple two-goal games for two players.
Two guys on the same team.
I read you wrong. I thought it was like club mates or something. All right, okay.
No, Brazil did it in 98, Ronaldo and Cesar Sampaio against Chile.
All right,
and Argentina did it in 98, Ariel Ortega and Gabriel Batistuta. So
yeah.
JJ could not have handled the first question any worse, to the point where he didn't even understand the question.
I didn't.
We continue. Harry Kane is the third Englishman to score a hat-trick at the World Cup. Can you name the other two?
Sir Geoff Hurst.
In 1966.
And a hat-trick. And Gary Lineker against Poland in 1986.
Bang. You're back on the scorecard. One more. This is for the win.
All right.
Speaking of Kane, he has scored two or more goals in the first two games of his team's World Cup. No player had done that since 1974 when Gregor Zlato of Poland did it. But oddly enough, Kane is actually one of two players to already do it at this World Cup. Can you name the other? A guy with two or more goals in the first two games for his team in the World Cup.
Cheryshev.
Lukaku.
Oh, God.
Lukaku. This is very weird. And thank you for rallying and seeing through the game.
No, I got the first question wrong. I thought you were on about guys, because you were on about Spurs, that, you know, two teammates from a club scored in a World Cup. That's what I thought it was. And I was wrong.
So Lukaku, they're in the same group, Lukaku, Kane.
Hmm.
This is a thing, like I said, that hasn't happened since 1974. They then, with England and Belgium, they shared the number one song during our whole group preview thing. Both teams are tied in every statistical category that there is right now in this tournament, except for fair play. I mean, like, the similarities right now between England and Belgium is it's crazy to me. It's like looking in a mirror, really something. They've been maybe the two of the most impressive teams. Very, very unusual.
They've played two average teams, right, in the group and come
it is
through
a little,
it.
It's a little bit of shame that probably one of the games that people were most excited about in
England,
the group
Belgium,
stage,
yeah,
and it's not really going to mean much.
It's not. I mean, Roy Keane is telling them on ITV, just focus on the next game. Don't drop anyone. Don't rest anyone. But you know both managers are going to have to do that because of injuries and fatigue.
Yeah.
And yellow cards.
Yep. So let's see. Our second observation.
Identity is one for me. And I think you've got some crossover with this. It's just weird that a tournament that's essence is the idea of nation against nation could throw up something like what happened on Friday with Granit Xhaka and Jedrin Shaqiri and the whole Kosovar Albanian gesture and the boots and the flags. Fines were handed down today for that Albanian eagle gesture.
You and I are really amazingly on the same page. This was without any talking beforehand. That is literally also my second observation. Shaqiri, Xhaka, and I put Lichtsteiner in there as well because he was also fined.
I just find it interesting that this very tournament should be kind of cut and dry. It's the Swiss, known for their neutrality, versus the Serbs, and yet, in the midst of it, is this kind of political, cultural, and ethnic resonance for these players. And we often talk about it, we particularly talk about it now because it seems to be such a hot topic, but identity is so, so complicated. And even at the World Cup, which, like I said, nation v nation, things can get pretty complex.
Yeah, I guess for those who don't know, we'll go a little bit more into it. So Shaqiri, Xhaka, and Lichtsteiner, all three of them narrowly avoided a possible two-match ban for making, and Lichtsteiner didn't do this, Shaqiri and Xhaka did, for Lichtsteiner did too. I don't even know if he knew what he was doing, though, for making what appeared to be a political symbol gesture after they had each scored goals. Including Shaqiri's massive winner right at the end, which is a shame that this story has almost overshadowed what was a really dramatic second half in a really important game in that group. I'm reading now from Andrew Das's article in the New York Times. Xhaka and Shaqiri, who scored goals against Serbia, were fined 10,000 Swiss francs, which is about $10,000. Lichtsteiner was fined 5,000 Swiss francs. The fines resolved three of the six disciplinary proceedings resulting from the test game, but Serbia was ordered to pay two. Serbia's soccer federation was fined 54,000 Swiss francs and issued a warning because Serbian supporters were found to have displayed discriminatory banners and messages, as well as for throwing objects during the match. The federation's president, Slavisa Kokeza, and Serbia's coach, Mladen Krstičić, were fined 5,000 Swiss francs for post-game comments critical of FIFA and the match's referee. All of the fines to individuals were classified as violations of FIFA's rules on unsporting behavior, not the more serious charge of bringing political messages into the game.
Yeah.
Which I think I need someone to explain to me how this wasn't that. And that's the thing. I don't even know exactly where I stand on this, how I feel about it. I certainly don't know enough about the conflict that has, like you said, kind of created a mini firestorm in this game. So I don't even want to go into the political realm of it. I'm just saying, how does FIFA explain this? Now, I'm not trying to come down on Shaqiri, Xhaka, and Lichtsteiner, but if there's wording in this rule that the more serious charge is for bringing political messages into the game, FIFA has backed themselves into a rules corner. Because, like I said before, I know they don't want referees deciding matches and things like that, and there's still everything to play for these teams moving into the last game of the group stage. But if the charge involves political messages being brought into the game, and I believe the word provoke is even in there, I don't know. You can't tell me how this doesn't fall under that.
Well, I spoke to an Albanian friend of mine today, and she said that it's not necessarily a political symbol, the eagle symbol that they made. It's often used as a part of Albanian pride for Kosovar Albanians and Albanians in general. Now, I get what you're saying.
Well, the only thing is, again, she obviously knows infinitely more about this than I do. But I went back and looked to see how Shaqiri and Xhaka have celebrated goals that they've scored in the past.
Yeah.
And I didn't look to see how they celebrated other Switzerland goals. I was looking at highlight reels of them scoring for Stoke and Arsenal, and I didn't see them do that a single time. Now, maybe somebody who knows more and has seen more of their games consistently can tell me that no, they do it all the time. But I looked at a bunch, and I didn't see a single one. So when they now do it against Serbia, a nation where they know it will bother some people, whether that's right or not, Serbia, I'm not the one to say, but it seems more like a calculated political message than not.
And also, Serbia does not recognize Kosovo, the nation, which is part of it. No, Shaqiri played like a man who was possessed, and he was definitely driven by that. There's no question to me that this game had a little bit of an edge to it for him. He said June 22nd in a piece that was released by the Players' Tribune, "When I run onto the field at the 2018 World Cup, I will have the flags of both Switzerland and Kosovo on my boots. Not because of politics or anything like that, but because the flags tell the story of my life."
Which is totally fair.
Right.
I got no issue with that at all.
And I think the treatment they got at the start of the game, the jeering and the booing and the whistles when they touched the ball, kind of may have prompted them to decide, you know what? It's open season here, and we're busting out the eagle.
That could be. I'm just saying FIFA has an awkward rule here
Very tough. And the people who naively go around talking about, well, politics and sport should be separate, are living in dreamland.
Oh, my God.
Dreamland.
It's a tough one.
You're
man.
Right, though. Letter of the law, this shouldn't be countenanced.
Shaqiri was asked about it after, and he said, "I think about this. I don't want to speak. In football, you always have emotions. You can see what I did, and it's just emotion, and I'm just happy to have scored the goal. I did it, and we don't have to speak about this." So there's that.
Yeah.
You have more on...
No, I don't. I'm on to my third.
Okay, you want to go first?
Yeah.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf.
So often over the years, this man has conjured something special. They look to cross for a miracle. He's delivered! Would you believe it? They were 45 minutes away from going out. Then a prayer sent off. And now they're back in the driving seat above Sweden. Even the Germans are staggered.
What an incredible moment.
What a way to finish a game. Facing elimination. Well, maybe not elimination necessarily. Not at that point. But, I mean, for most of the game, they teetered on the edge. And you know what? If John Guidetti had squared to Emil Forsberg, it could have been to equalise the game, not to win it in such dramatic fashion. Never write off the Germans, Andrew. Trademark that phrase. It's so true. But it was the aftermath of that game where I read something in Bilde, which is the German publication, and they had some interesting thoughts about the idea of growing into the tournament. This is what they had to say in one of their comment pieces. "The myth of the never-ending Germans lives again. This has a greater value for a tournament than 5-0 walks in the preliminary round," which is a shot probably at Belgium and England, who've been the ones who have been kind of blowing teams out of the water. And it made me think, do the group stage struggles, the tense finishes and close-run things of the Germans, Argentina, which is a very close run thing, Spain against, you know, supposedly lesser opposition, does that steal them for the knockout rounds? For the pressures of the knockout rounds? Does it make them better? That was the overwhelming thing for me. Kroos kind of said it himself. This might be something that galvanizes us and makes us kick on. This winning through adversity.
I would have to go back and look at what other eventual champions
well, look
did
at Spain,
in the group stage.
Spain losing the first game to the Swiss in 10 and then not losing the game to the end.
I mean, it's hard for me to say that a team playing well in the group stage is doing a disservice to themselves. Like, that just feels like such a contradictory statement that I really almost can't say that.
Well, Bilda said it.
Do you agree with that? That it's better to be playing these, like, dogfight, right-to-the-end kind of games?
Let's take the example of England in 06 with the Golden Generation. They were bad in the group stage, and they continued to be bad until they went out to Portugal. So that didn't really help them.
I really think that it's just a case-by-case basis. Mm. I don't know that there's anything to it. I really think that it's just, like, almost to the point of one game has no correlation to the next in a tournament like this.
Yeah, maybe I'm looking for patterns that aren't there.
Matchups are so different. Certain teams are going to play you a certain way. I don't know. I think making blanket statements like that is just, you could probably, if we wanted to, we could probably sit here and find a bunch of examples that disprove it.
You were in the bar for that German game. What was that like?
Saturday was such an amazing day.
Yeah.
It was the day during this tournament that I asked my wife for permission to leave her and my son behind.
What?
And just,
you weren't crossing the border like to a new life, Andrew. So you were just going to a game.
I went with a bunch of friends we wound up going to Astoria.
Nice.
Which was great. For the Mexico game, we went out to a Mexican bar, Tacuba, and it was packed. Great scene. Really, really good time. And then right down the street from that is this beer garden called Studio Square, which is awesome. And we went there for the Germany-Sweden game. Same deal, packed with fans of both teams. And when Kroos scored the goal, I mean, the scenes were great. Sweden fans were just obviously devastated. And German fans went wild, and it was exactly what you would expect to see. The big screen set up around the place, it was awesome.
Did you cheer for the Germans?
No. I mean, I didn't cheer for them. I kind of just cheered that moment.
Yeah, you were caught up. Like, I was caught up in the moment, too.
I mean, it was such a cool goal. Like, from, I don't know.
He ruled it. Royce stopped it, right?
Yeah.
So he rolled it to Royce, stopped it, and he whipped it.
To get just like the slightly better angle, and he couldn't have done it any better.
There was nowhere else he could have put it to score.
Nope. It was, I don't know, it was awesome. And I guess in moments like that, what's the line you always say about the cliche with Germany? You play for 90 minutes, such and such happens. You know,
Gary Lineker revised it. It was a Gary Lineker phrase. He revised it at the weekend. He says, 22 men play for 90 minutes. And then Germany gets someone sent off, and still the Germans win.
Yeah, I mean, that only made it more incredible. So, they're going to have to move forward without Jerome Boateng. But with Toni Kroos playing the way that he did, because he was partially to blame for the first goal for Sweden, and for him
He was, but it shouldn't end up in the net just because of one straight pass in the midfield.
Yeah, no, you're right. But for a guy like him, you don't really expect something like that to happen. But for him to come back like that and perform the way that he did, not just on the goal, but in the entire second half, he was so good. And I thought Germany in that second half were obviously, I mean, the way they just, and I know possession can be a statistic that we hesitate to sometimes use, but the way they just controlled play, their passing rate was so efficient. They came up huge when they needed to most.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it was a player beating another player and winning a free kick that caused the goal, and makes you wonder. Leroy Sané.
Well, what do you mean? They won the game. They did score.
Yeah, I know, but
what are you saying?
They need to do more of that. They need more of that in the team. Air goal.
Well, I'll tell you what. The guy who, I don't know if we ever found this out for sure, but once again, Julian Brandt came in and hit the post for the second straight game, and he was kind of considered to be the guy who may have made this team instead of Leroy Sané, right?
Yeah.
It's hard for me to look at the relatively small sample size we've seen of him so far. I've been impressed. He's also that pacey, and it just feels like he's gonna score. I mean, in two games he's hit the post and the crossbar.
Look, maybe this is the game they figure it out.
Maybe we'll see if they click on. There's still that, we'll get to the different scenarios, but there's still a lot to be done there. My third observation was Mexico. I feel like they need to be spoken about with what they've done so far in this tournament. First off, before I even get into that, I did want to follow up on something that I mentioned last week when we were talking about how they were fined again for the chant that they do when the opposing goalkeeper kicks it. And I said it would be, if there are players out there on the team that are not in favor of what's going on, I'd like to know that they feel that way. And so thankfully, our listeners, as they often do, came to my aid, and at Jersey Jonathan specifically, he tweeted me to let me know that just a few days ago, Chicharito implored the fans to stop. He posted a message on social media saying, to all Mexican fans in the stadium, don't shout that word. Let's not risk another sanction. Which, that in itself made me think, well, it's the right message. But then on top of that, back in 2016, the Mexican team made a video. It was aimed at promoting, I guess, social acceptance. It never specifically mentioned the chant, but the message of this video seemed to be pretty clear. It was all about tolerance and respect for your fellow human beings. So Mexican players have stepped up, and almost inexplicably, their fans just feel a need to, they have to do this. But at any rate, I'd rather talk about the game. Mexico improved to 4-0 all time against Asian opponents at the World Cup. Pretty good.
It is pretty good. I don't think they did the chant on Saturday in Rostov.
Well, I'll tell you what, where I was watching, I was not able to hear volume.
No, it was Slate did an article on this very issue online, and they said that they didn't. So maybe the message has got through.
What do you think of Mexico so far? I mean, they've been one of the teams, obviously. This is the first time they've won their first two matches at a World Cup since 2002. I think they've been kind of one of the teams, I don't know if they're considered an underdog necessarily, but I feel like people have been feeling pretty good about what a lowly CONCACAF team has been able to achieve.
Easy there. I think they've been really good. They took their goals extremely well against South Korea. A South Korea team who hung in there and maybe could have had a goal themselves before the late Son goal, which was absolutely fantastic, but it was too little too late.
Well, I remember saying to my buddy that I was with, because it felt like Mexico were in control and they were going to win that game when Chicharito scored the second to go up 2-0. It felt like they can coast now. And then you see something like Guillermo Ochoa just play a ball in the worst possible moment directly to a Korean player. And then somehow Mexican defenders were able to kind of get back, and South Korea just couldn't finish the move. But a team maybe a little bit better than South Korea probably scores there, yeah. I would say. And then for Son to add the one right at the end that he did, man, if you're Mexico, you played well, you deserve to win. But there's also got to be a part of you after that that was like, okay, we dodged a little bit of a bullet. Right there.
I'm also looking at the Swedish and how obdurate and what's the other word you could say? They're so difficult to play against. They could cause Mexico problems. I hope they don't, because like Sweden, look at Sweden against 10-man Germany. They couldn't muster enough to beat 10-man Germany. And that kind of team you don't really want advancing in the tournament. So I hope Mexico get the job done, but Sweden will have their own. I mean, there's going to be a long period, I would suspect, of Mexico having the ball and trying to find ways to get through and unlock that Swedish backline.
I mentioned that little thing about CONCACAF. Did you see Miguel Delaney's tweet over the weekend?
I did.
I don't want to be a baby about this, so if you think that's happening, stop me, because I don't want to be one of those
people. No, have your say. Have your say.
Well, he tweeted during the Panama-England game, Panama, fine advertisement for CONCACAF getting stripped of a place at the big show.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned into a war basically between him and Matt Doyle on Twitter. Matt Doyle tweeting, over the last 32 years, 9 World Cups, 14 of 27 CONCACAF teams have advanced from the group stage. He also pointed out that since expanding to 32 teams in 1998, fewer than 50% of UEFA teams have advanced out of the group stage in tournaments held outside of Europe. So trying to give it back to, look, I'll tell you right now, I feel that I'm not talking to you. But there is, if you are an American who wants to talk about world football or world soccer or whatever you choose to call it, there is an inferiority complex that comes along with it. It feels like you have to go into every conversation knowing just a little bit more to make sure you don't screw up, because you do feel like European fans are waiting for you to
pounce.
They make
fun of you.
And whether it's true or not, it's just how I feel. And the other thing that I would say to some fans in this country right now while this tournament is going on, tone it down, guys. You're not helping anybody's case here with expanding the popularity of the sport when you start getting on people for saying the score is 1-0. No. It's actually 1-0. Somebody tweeted at me today because they had heard somebody say that the game ended in a 1-1 tie. And they say, how's anybody supposed to take him seriously when he's saying 1-1 tie and not a 1-1 draw? Oh my God, get over yourselves. Seriously. We're going to have different words. Our lexicon here in the United States is going to be a little bit different from that of what people say in Europe or South America. Doesn't necessarily mean because you say tie instead of draw that you know the game less than somebody says draw. That stuff really bothers me. Sometimes we call it soccer. Sometimes we call it football. Sometimes you say 1-0. Sometimes you say 1-0. I mean, Mike, these are such like insignificant things that soccer fans do that just turns the sport off to so many people in this country that maybe do want to get into it, but they just can't fight through the wall of smugness.
Okay. One request I would make, and I agree with a lot of what you said there, one request I would make to our listeners is stop tweeting me with suggestions in the various groups of this World Cup as to where the US would have finished in any given group. Yeah. Don't do that. It's terrible. It's torturous. Yeah. Someone asked me, do you think we would have done better against England than Panama did? And I said it would have been 4-1. Okay.
Fair enough.
All right.
Yeah. So that's about it. I don't want to go too deeply into Miguel's tweet because I know what he's trying to do. I know he's trying to bait American soccer fans.
Successfully.
But yes, however, in the end, I felt like he wound up eating his own bait because he got wrapped into conversations that were like, what would you say, JJ? 40 tweets and replies.
40
responses.
Tweets and replies. Like, go out, take a girl for a drink, have a meal.
Right. So I think
read a book, watch some Netflix.
He may have been
do
trying
anything.
To, he may have
what
been trying to bait people, but I felt like the tables got turned on him at a certain point and he felt
like
he got lost in it.
He's in Russia right now.
Yeah, I don't know
what's
going on.
What's he doing?
There.
Yeah. Do something else with your time.
Look, obviously, I thought it was an annoying tweet, but whatever. It's as I was kind of saying before. This is our battle, JJ. American fans like myself, Matt Doyle. The struggle continues.
Fight the good
Let's
fight.
Let's see. Before we get to our mailbag, you've got a little something over there, don't you?
Hiring, Andrew.
Yes, always.
Every business needs great people, and you're a great guy, and also a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you never miss a great match. That feels like us. We never miss a great match. Because we're watching every single one of them.
That's right.
The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The word recruiter, I just like, I don't know. I was happy for you to do the read today because I struggle with that word. Recruiter. It's one of those words where the more I say it, I don't know. I just don't like it. It's uncomfortable coming out.
Mailbag.
Yeah.
At CO Soccer Pod on the Twitter machine, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Annie in New York kicks us off. Hello, fellow New Yorkers. First wanted to say I love the coverage of the World Cup and during the regular season. I've been a listener for about 3 years.
Nice.
Wow. And hearing JJ do Andrew's accent on the pod you released last night almost made me spit out my coffee on a packed Q train this morning.
Wait, which one was that?
Andrew announced that his wife will be allowing him to go out on Saturday and that he doesn't like going out on Sunday for, as JJ said, it's the Lord's Day. Main point, word is Sampaoli and Messi have been thick as thieves in selecting the squad and tactics for the World Cup. That was the word. So can we sort of blame Messi for this mess? I mean, you can't really have it both ways. You can't select the entire team as Messi is said to have done and then get to throw your manager under the bus and claim there was little Messi could do. So while Argentina are in one bleep of a pickle, can't you sort of blame Messi for helping team selection and playing like crap? Doesn't matter anyway. Belgium are going to win. They're the only team that's looked remotely impressive thus far. Hashtag, come on, you Spurs. Lots of things have happened since then. And there's been almost like a coup d'etat, which the Argentinian FA have denied, against Sampaoli. Mascherano has said, no, it was simply us going to talk to Sampaoli, give him some ideas and tactics. Sampaoli has denied this today and called it, in the guise of almost a Trumpian press conference, has said it's fake news, not real, and that people are living in an alternative reality. I don't live in this alternative reality, says Sampaoli. So I don't know what's true. I had heard that they were texting each other prior to the tournament about tactics, but I feel that relationship may have broken down. Kyle Newman, Sean Dyche and Drew. Love the pod. If you're ever in Memphis, let's grab a pint. Quick mailbag question. I don't think you guys discussed the Guardian article calling out Fox pundits, which called Rob Stone a gummy bear, etc. After a week or so, what have you thought about Fox's coverage, play-by-play, etc.? Now, it's difficult, one, because we know a lot of the guys and we've spoken to a lot of guys and had them on the show that are doing this. And honestly, there's stuff I love about Fox's coverage and there's stuff I don't like. But that's kind of the way coverage goes. I really like Derek Ray and Ali Wagner. I think they're very good. And then there's other things like, say, the late night show, which I wish was just a highlight show.
Yes. However, there is also a highlight show.
Okay.
Which is kind of like a supplement to... So I've seen both on Fox.
Right.
You're right. Their late night show, I don't necessarily know that I love it, but I don't know, is there ever going to be coverage of a sport where you love every single thing that that network is doing for it?
So probably not.
Most of the broadcast pairings I like. You know we like JP on the show. He's one of the guests. Yeah,
Miola has grown into the tournament, I think.
We love John Strong. I think him and Stu Holden have gotten even better together as the tournament's gone on. I don't know. I don't really have too much negative to say about it.
I honestly don't either. I would love like longer analysis, and at halftime to do the analysis piece by piece, do everything. But guess what, JJ? It's not the BBC, which doesn't have to worry about advertising time. Fox has to do ads.
Yeah.
And so it's always going to be condensed.
And one other thing that I would say for what Fox has done here, there was a chance when this started and the U.S. weren't going to be in this tournament. I didn't know how this was going to go. Was this going to be an FS1, an FS2 tournament? No, these games have all been on Fox, like regular broadcast TV Fox. So I do give them credit for that, for really going, you know, they had no choice, but they've gone all in despite the fact that the U.S., Italy, these teams aren't in it. So
we can
nitpick if we want, but it's been fine.
I read the Guardian article, and I honestly thought it was a little bit sneering about just the way American TV is presented. Anyway, I thought it was. I don't think it was fair. I mean, Rob Stone's a gummy bear. What does that even mean?
Look, American soccer is an easy punching bag for the rest of the world because it's not the number one sport in this country, and it is everywhere else. So there is. Look, it just is. I don't know how else to say.
There is one.
I don't want to keep doing that, though.
What?
Being a whiny American. Oh, why is everyone so mean to us?
You're just a whiny guy anyway. Never mind your nationality.
I don't want to keep going down that.
There's one thing I will say. I mean, they do these little historical segments about Russia. Mm-hmm. And there was one where it was the fall of the Romanov dynasty, which was the murder of a family.
Yeah.
And they said how they burned the bones of the family. And then they cut back to Kate Abdo, who was supposed to talk about, you know, tactics, Belgium's tactics straight away, like the death of children. Yeah,
there's no easy transition.
No, I don't know how you do that. I mean, she handled it well, but still. Thomas wants to know if Croatia, Mexico or Belgium will have the deepest run.
Of those three?
Yeah.
Well, we have to see how it's really hard to say that before we know.
The shakeup of the groups.
One side of the bracket right now looks like it has potential to be so heavily weighted as opposed to the other side. So until I know which side... Belgium would be the answer that I'd want to say, but I want to see which side of the bracket they wind up falling on.
Okay, Nathaniel Koloff says Germany and Sweden are going through.
Would that be unbelievable? Should we get to that now as a transition into the scenarios?
No, we can't. We have one more email that we have to do, and I need sad music.
Can you just... But before I even play the sad music... For Mexico,
I know,
to envision a scenario with how this has gone for them to have won their first two games and to still maybe not advance.
What happened the first time you didn't make the last 16? Oh, we bet the world champions in our opening game. It would be nuts. Well, I need sad walking away music. Saddest email we've ever got. This is from Ryan Ricks. I'm marooned in the capital of soccer antipathy in America, North Dakota. And I had to go to the closest city, Minot, 90 miles away today for some errands.
Minot?
Minot. While in Minot, I thought I would pop into the city's lone Irish pub for some lunch and some Iran Portugal. Not a single TV in the place was showing the World Cup until I requested it. So my question to you is, can they call themselves a real Irish pub if the pinnacle of international soccer is not default on their screens? No, they can't.
No.
They can barely call themselves a bar. I didn't discover your podcast until it started appearing on the ESPN FC feed, but it quickly became my favourite soccer podcast. So, if you ever find yourselves questioning where your life went wrong for you to end up in Lyonite, North Dakota, we'll commiserate over drinks in the town bar. Thanks, Ryan.
For those, I can't speak to, what was the other city he just said?
Minot.
Oh, Minot. It's known as Little Chicago. Chicago is the home of soccer in this country, is it not? That's where U.S. soccer is. So
yeah,
there are, so maybe it's...
Minot's not doing a very good job. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. He sounds so lonely.
Okay, here we go.
Before we get the permutations, guys, yeah, this is a rallying cry right now because I never do this and everyone's telling us we should be doing this. Get on iTunes and rate and review this podcast, even if you hate me, even if you hate my big fat cabbage of an Irish head. Whoa. And Andrew's whiny, has to ask his wife to go outside the front door face. Yeah. Just rate and review us. Leave a comment, give us loads of stars, just do it.
By the way, I mentioned that I like having Sunday to recover after days like that. We wound up waking up super early and spending the day at the zoo, which is, again, I love going to the zoo. It's really fun, especially when you have a 2.5-year-old.
Yeah, the smell of camel is exactly what you need when you're viciously hungover.
I was good for a while, and then I'd say I hit a patch while we were there for about 45 minutes where I just didn't speak. Not because I was bored by anything.
Mommy?
I was just like...
What's Daddy doing? Why is he vomited on that marmoset?
All right, ready? So here's what we're going to do. For our what to watch for, it's crazy to talk about these games without telling you the scenarios for them. But going through scenarios is really tough and tedious. So we're just gonna go for it. We're going to play music that hopefully keeps you engaged. And if you find it boring, just hit your little bip, 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 that little 15-second move ahead thing. Are you ready, JJ?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, Group C, Tuesday, 10 a.m., France and Denmark. For France, they are through. They clinched the top spot with a draw in this game. Denmark are through with a draw. A win for them would top the group.
Tuesday, 10 a.m., Australia versus Peru. Peru are eliminated. Australia need to win and need Denmark to lose. If either margin is more than a single goal, Australia are through. If both margins are one, it gets complicated.
Right, Google it. Let's see. Group D, Tuesday, 2 o'clock p.m. All right, this is a bit of chaos here. Argentina and Nigeria. Nigeria win and they're in. A draw would be enough if Iceland draw or if Iceland win by just one goal. For Argentina, they must win and they need Iceland to draw or lose. If both teams win, Argentina has to make up a minus one goal differential.
Tuesday, 2 p.m., Croatia versus Iceland. Croatia, a draw will be enough for them to top the group. Even a loss will probably do it as long as they don't get killed.
All right, Group F. Now, this one is about as complicated as it gets. So rather than going team by team, I'm just going to read for you what was written at ProSoccerTalk.com. Ready? Mexico will finish first with a win or draw versus Sweden. Or a draw and a Germany draw or loss. Or one goal loss and a Germany loss. Germany will finish first with a win over South Korea and a Mexico loss if the two results combine to overturn their two-goal differential deficit. Sweden will finish first with a win and Germany and a Germany loss or draw, or a Germany win if the two results combine to turn their identical goal differential over. South Korea will finish second with a win and a Sweden loss if the three results combine to overturn their two-goal differentials. That is... Yeah. All right.
Whatever.
Enjoy.
Group E, Wednesday at 2 p.m., Brazil versus Serbia. Brazil, a win or draw clinches progression. Serbia, a win could get them through. A draw could if Switzerland lose by multiple goals. Wednesday at 2 p.m., Switzerland versus Costa Rica. Costa Rica eliminated. See ya. Switzerland, they move on with at least a draw.
Group G, Thursday at 10 a.m., England and Belgium both are through. They're tied in all the major tie-breaking categories, so a draw would send this to the fair play tiebreaker. If that also winds up in a tie, they may literally draw lots, pick out of a hat.
That's happened before.
This is ridiculous.
Italia 90.
It needs to be addressed, because this is ridiculous.
I want an American solution based on data, okay?
Group H, anything it would
Thursday,
be better than that.
2 p.m., Senegal versus Colombia. Colombia, they advance with a win or a draw, and Japan lost. Senegal advance with a draw. By the way, Colombia, unbelievable against Poland at the weekend.
Oh, I enjoyed it. One of my favorite performances of the tournament so far. And then Thursday at 2 o'clock p.m., Japan and Poland. Poland, as you know, are out. Japan advance with a draw. If Japan and Senegal end the day with identical scorelines, the fair play tiebreaker could come into play. And as we know, if that is also identical, JJ, they will pick a name of a country, and that will be how they're 4 years in the making, qualifying, all that. That's how somebody will move on to the knockout stage. Look, there's no good way. There's no good way once you get down through that many tiebreakers. So I understand this. But there just has to be something better than that.
Right. Adam, like some, maybe
who's taken the most shots? Who's had the most possession? Something that has at least something to do with the game. I mean, think, people. There's a lot of smart people in FIFA. They can figure this out. We're going to pick out of a hat? Ugh. It's if that were my country, I'd lose my mind.
Yeah,
I would lose my mind over it.
We need to get the college electoral system in.
Red card.
I'm going to go first here. We've completely abandoned MLS throughout all of this.
You're not talking MLS.
I just want to bring one MLS thing because I know there are still people paying attention. I'm seeing the games over the weekend. There's people in those stadiums that still care. They're watching the World Cup and they're watching MLS. So I feel bad that we've just like completely left this behind. JJ, my red card goes to Toronto FC because while all of you and myself, while we've all been focused on the World Cup, things have not gotten better for Toronto FC. This is an article now from Matt Reed. He points out that Toronto FC are currently on pace to finish the season with just 34 points. Last year, 34 points would have been good for second worst record in the Eastern Conference in MLS. But it's not just bad by today's standards. It's actually historically bad. Reed goes on and points out that should they remain on their 34-point pace, it would be the second worst season by a defending champ in MLS history. Only DC United's disastrous 30-point campaign in 2000 would be worse. And the thing is, it's weird because they've actually been largely unaffected by players departing for the World Cup. They lost to NYCFC this past weekend, 2-1 in the Bronx. They had Giovinco, they had Bradley, they had Vasquez, Morrow, Haglund, Vanderveel, Osorio, Bono. All these guys were in Toronto FC's lineup. They're still losing games. Now, they're only 6 points behind the Union, who are currently in that final playoff spot in the East. There's other teams in between the Union and Toronto, but they're six points back of that final playoff spot. They've played 15 games, so there is still a lot of season to go. But 15 games is also a fairly significant sample size, and I just wonder at what point do you look at them and say, maybe this is just going to be a lost year? We're not at that point yet. Certainly not. We've always said, just get into the playoffs.
Two wins.
But, I mean, this is at a point now where I remember, what was it, like 2 months ago, you and I were like, don't worry, they'll get this sorted out. And here we are 2 months later, and it is not sorted out. So
I haven't changed my opinion. They're two wins out of the last playoff spot. They'll be grand.
You might be right. In the end, you might be right. But it's at a point now where if you are a Toronto fan, you are allowed to start saying, guys, what the hell is actually going on here? I think you're okay to now get into that kind of mode.
You can ask that. You can say what's going on here, but say it after the World Cup.
All right. What do you have?
My red card. We talked about identity earlier, and this was something terrible that emerged from the epic finish to that Sweden-Germany game. This is from The Guardian. Now, the Sweden midfielder, Jimmy Durmat, has delivered a powerful message against racism after being targeted on social media for giving away the free kick that led to Germany's 95th winner in Sochi on Saturday. Durmat, who came on in the 74th minute, fouled Timo Werner on the edge of the area, and Toni Kroos scored the set piece to give Germany the 2-1 victory. On Sunday, as the Sweden squad gathered for training, the coach, Janne Andersson, turned to the media to say that they would start the session by addressing the completely unacceptable post-match developments. He explained that the whole squad had lined up behind Durmat to underline that everyone was backing the player. Durmat, who was born in Sweden to Assyrian parents, then read a statement which said, I would just like to say a few things regarding what happened after the game yesterday. I am a footballer at the highest level, so I have accepted that I am criticised for what I do on the pitch. That's part of the job, and I am always willing to accept that, but there are limits, and that limit was passed yesterday. Durmat, who plays for Toulouse, added, I am Swedish, and I am proud to represent the Swedish national team. It is the biggest thing you can do as a footballer. I will never let any racist destroy my pride. We all have to make a stand against racism. I took a pause there because I actually didn't want to read some of the awful things that Durmat read out that were said about him on social media.
He went through
media.
It.
Well, he did. Some of them are, I don't want to say them again.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. Who are these people?
It's like, the ugly side of the game.
Yeah, but why is that? Why is that your go-to?
I don't know.
If you come on and you say, Durmat, you absolute clown, why didn't you stay on your feet? I could have tackled better. Fine, whatever. The fact that that's your default says something about
you. In a moment like that, people there are some people who just go to a dark place and think, okay, this guy has angered me in a way that I can't even believe it. What's the one thing that I could say to him over anything else that's going to make him feel as angry as I am now? Oh, and more often than not, racist comments are probably what will get you there.
That's crazy.
It's awful. Let's see.
Caught Offside's man of the match.
JJ, I went with online streaming. I know you love it. The global numbers for online streaming of this World Cup continue to hammer home the reality that the ways in which people consume media and sports in particular are evolving.
You sound like the worst media teacher in the world.
I'm being very professorial here. Awful Announcing, the sports blog that kind of monitors sports media, they have an article up citing a report in The Independent detailing just how impressive the numbers have been. Now, in this report, it cites a company called Conviva, which monitors online streaming. According to Conviva, the most streamed event in history was this past year's Super Bowl, which peaked at 5.5 million viewers, concurrent viewers, so people watching at once. Until now, the group stage match between Argentina and Iceland, which ended in a 1-1 draw, peaked at 7.7 million concurrent viewers. Over 2 million viewers more than the Super Bowl, a group stage match. In addition to that, Telemundo announced that Argentina versus Croatia, a different Argentina match, was the most streamed Spanish broadcast in history with 4.3 million viewers online. When I see numbers like this, it makes me wonder a little bit about the business side of the World Cup and sports in general, because right now, how are TV rights going to be sorted out in the future? Because when you see this amount of people flocking to their computers, especially here in the United States because of the times that the games are on, and even in Europe to a certain extent, everyone now, I don't want to say everyone, most people have access to being able to watch these games online. All you need is a cable subscription and a password. So I wonder if FIFA will start separating, okay, like Fox, you have won the bidding for the TV rights to the World Cup, but ESPN has won the rights to the online aspect of the World Cup. I wonder, right now it's all a package deal. I wonder if that will change, and I wonder just how valuable online rights will be versus having TV rights, because it seems like the two are starting to get a little bit closer to one another, maybe on a more accelerated rate than we would have initially thought.
Yes, an interesting point.
Especially for a tournament like this, where pretty much no matter where in the world you're watching it, you're guaranteed of being at work for some of it, which is where people are more likely to do this. Interesting.
I would imagine as well, net neutrality in this country is going to be crucial for the soccer fan moving forward. I'm pretty sure the internet's going to be massive. You watch my words.
Wow. Yeah. What a hot, scorching hot take. You heard it here first. Internet, important.
My men of the match are Radamel Falcao and James Rodriguez. That game, Andrew, I know Poland were bad, but Colombia answered the call to put in a performance that they absolutely needed. They had to win, and they did win, and they did it in some style. And you know me, I'm a naysayer on Colombia. I'm not convinced by them. And I've hammered James Rodriguez for the last, I'd say since the last World Cup, consistently. But the pass to Cuadrado,
it's the pass of the tournament, and nothing's going to top it.
The weight, the curve, the bend, everything. His general play was excellent. I would also like to say that Radamel Falcao, look at where he's come from after that period at Manchester United under LVG. Did we ever think he'd make it back to a level of this standard? And the way he took his goal was just, it was a thing of beauty. I know Cuadrado's finish was good, but his was magnificent. Absolutely magnificent. So, vamos Colombia, to all my Colombian friends. Well done. Hope you make it out of the group stage and that we see in the last 16. And for now, I shall park my reservations.
I think I enjoyed that performance by Colombia more than I've enjoyed any other performance by any team so far in this tournament. Wow. More than England's 6-1, partially because that was against Panama, partially because a couple of those were penalties. Like, these were, you know, I thought these were just beautiful goals that Colombia, that were just well-worked goals against, say what you want about Poland, but they did enter as the top seed in that group, top six or seven in the world, according to the ridiculous FIFA rankings. So you have to take that and look at it and say Poland are a decent team, and Colombia, I thought, looked so good. I love Juan Cuadrado. I thought he was awesome in that game. And like I said, the pass that James played to him, to just curl that around four Polish defenders directly right into Cuadrado's path. Man, that was such impressive stuff.
Yeah, you've got to wonder, and I know they were down to 10 men, but you got to wonder if Peckerman had left Cuadrado in against Japan, we might be talking about a different, we might be talking Maybe. About a Colombia that's really rolling. But they are where they are, and it's going to be interesting in the last game. So yeah, they're my men of the match.
Very good. And you're a big man for doing that after you've been just ripping them basically at every turn.
Well, you've got to be able to hold your hands up when, you know, someone you're critical of does something good.
Yep. So there you go, everybody. That is Monday's podcast. We will be back with you on Thursday when we will obviously have a clearer picture of what's going to be going down in the knockout stages, which I can't wait for. It's so funny how, like, the group stage feels like everything right now. And then a week from now, this will all just be distant memory, and the knockout stage just dwarfs everything that happens. It's the natural progression of things.
Like I said, it's a monster amount of football to watch.
I know. Our heads are just scrambled.
I've eaten
right now.
Too much football. There's no doubt about it.
I know. We need to go digest. Hey, this was good, my friend. I'll see you in a few days. To you, I say,
take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.